Welcome to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. I am Doc Mike, host of the podcast. A series of Forrest Gump-like events have brought me to where I am, a small-town country dentist. My experiences in country living, country freedom, country dentistry, and my reaction to pertinent current events may help you live a life of more freedom and less worry. Thank you for choosing the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Now let's get to today's freedom-inspiring episode. Hey, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. Thanks for joining me here live on Real Liberty Media, or thanks for downloading the podcast and listening to it. Leave a little thumbs up or a like or some feedback is always appreciated. Thank you very much. Let's get to today's show. Should be interesting, I hope. This is the fastest hour on Real Liberty Media, and I don't turn left. I'm just a guy having fun making light of the darkness. And hey, could you all, if you are on any social media sites, please post that we're live so we could get people in here to the chat room and expose them to some truth. I think it's always good. Man, you're seeing more and more truth every day, right? I don't know if you guys are following along like any of the, not the mainstream media. You won't find it there. But on a lot of sites, you can find out what's going on in the world for real. And I think that that's paying dividends right now. I think we're starting to see a kind of a huge movement away from what we've been doing. At least I hope that that's what I'm seeing. And we'll find out soon. I mean, the midterms are coming up. It's always, there's always a lot of hype right before the midterms. Like, nobody really knows what's, I had something weird on my screen. Sorry. Distracted. Anyway, but with the midterms coming up, I think we're going to see a pretty big change. And it's kind of crazy to see what politicians say these days. It's always just so fascinating to me to listen to them. The one specific idea I talked about before is that one who, comes on in one commercial, she talks about killing babies, and she ends it with taking away guns. And I'm just like, I don't know. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. But anyway, like I said, if you can post to social media sites, let's do that. Bring people in. Let's expose them to some truth. And, around the homestead here, man, it's crazy. At one point today, I was thinking to myself, it's like every person associated with the house is doing something with food. And I don't mean eating it. So today, we started making sauerkraut. Hang on one sec. I got to do something. All right, I'll cut that part out of the video. I hope you guys do go check out the video. It's kind of fun, I guess, different. At least you can watch while I ramble on and maybe, take you to some of the sites that I go to for information, and you can check it out yourself. But anyway, at one point today, I'm not kidding, I was just like looking at everybody. They either had some kind of container in their hands full of either tomatoes or cabbage or peppers or melons. Or mullein, or whatever. It's just been crazy busy with food processing. Matter of fact, so dang busy that Rochelle actually said to me, I think you need to take a week off so we can kind of handle all this stuff. So who knows, that may be coming up. It's busy. The tomatoes, I'm not kidding. It's like we finally just decided moments ago, we're just going to go pull all of the tomato plants and hang them in the greenhouse and let the tomatoes ripen on the vine. and pull them as they ripen, because there's just so dang many of them. And we got that rain coming in this week, and finally, thank God, we have rain coming in, not tomorrow, but Friday. So tomorrow afternoon, it's going to cloud up, they say. And then, you know, we're going to get some rain on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. That's the way Oregon's supposed to be, like a little bit of, you know, rain in October, November, December, January, February, March, April, May, June. Well, last year we did go into June like with way too much rain, but it's okay because, man, I think it probably cut back on having a ton of wildfires this summer. We had some, but not nearly as many as we had like 2 years ago. Because it was so dry, and then, you know, once fires start and wind comes up, it's just like, you know, out of control. But no, we've had pretty, you know, mild events throughout the summer. So I'm glad the rain is coming. It's going to wet everything down. It's probably going to put those couple of fires that we do have, kind of get them under control, give those firefighters a little help. That'll be awesome. And, man, those guys, that's a tough job. I can't even imagine doing what they do. I seriously can't. Number one, I don't like the heat. And then they're usually fighting fires in the summertime. And I can't even imagine the amount of heat they're exposed to. But thank God for those guys. I'm glad we have somebody to do it. There was an update to my... Wait, let me finish with the homestead first. Because I really wanted to... I talked about sauerkraut. I talked about harvesting mullein. I'm telling you, that mullein tea has been just a godsend for me. Really helping out with kind of getting this this irritating cough, especially the last few days. Our air quality has been kind of in the yellow zone, so it's been, you know, smoky and dusty. And because it's so dry, man, it's just like the dust will just tickle your throat and get you to coughing. And the mullein tea has been awesome, and it's a very, you know, mild tasting tea, easy to drink. So that's really been helpful. And we have so much. I'm not kidding. I was out there today looking at the ground where we had pulled some plants, you know, harvested some Brussels sprouts and cabbages and stuff, and there's mullein everywhere. I'm not kidding. I don't even know how many plants there are. I started with one plant last year. Thank you, Beth Z, for pointing that out to me. I would have never known that plant was as helpful as it is. And now we just have a ton of it. I'm not kidding. We have mullein plants everywhere. We even put together a box of rosettes for the other doc that I work with on Thursdays, because she said she'd really like to get some going, and we had put some in a planter box for her, and I don't know what she's going to do with them. I go, well, don't put them in good soil. I go, put them, you know, in kind of really crappy soil or somewhere where there's kind of gravel or whatever, because all the mullein plants that we have that have volunteered, you know, on our property, they're in the crappiest, worst kind of clay, gravel, soil stuff. So, you know, it's not even, it doesn't have to be in good soil. And I hope she does some, you know, I hope she gets them going and does some good stuff with them. Oh, yeah, and we even, here in Oregon, on the west side of Oregon, we even grew some cantaloupe melons. They're bigger than a softball. They're kind of like two softballs side by side, roughly. I mean, between one and two softballs. So they're not big cantaloupes, but man, are they sweet and tasty. So I'm kind of amazed that, you know, that we actually got those. But I'm telling you, this year, it's just been such a crazy year. Everything is just suddenly coming on now. You know, all the stuff that was left in the ground for, you know, Well, because it wasn't ripe. It's just like hammering us. Like we send the kids down with a bucket and say, go pick 50 tomatoes. You know, not all at once. Hang on. Not all at once, but, you know, we send them down there one at a time and say, go pick 50 tomatoes. And, you know, they go down and pick 50 tomatoes and 50 tomatoes and 50 tomatoes and 50 tomatoes. And hell, by the time they're done, we send all four of them, we could probably go down and pick 50 more. I'm not kidding. It's crazy busy. But that's good. I mean, that's what we did this for. And then tonight on whatever local news, they were talking about a shortage of ketchup. Well, perfect, because we have so many dang tomatoes, we're going to have to find a ketchup recipe and make our own, you know, because we can, number one, and we have the fruit to do it, number two, and there's going to be a shortage. And these grandkids love ketchup, so we'll figure something out, make our own, and we have some zucchini relish. So remember last weekend, this past show, I was talking about Crystal and the kids went to the coast to can, but they took all this zucchini to make this zucchini relish, and we actually got a can of Whitney's dad who put this relish together before, like last season or earlier this season, I don't know, and it's delicious. So we had kind of hot dog night tonight. I had a chicken brat, and I used some of that relish on it and some mustard, and it was delicious, man. It was like fantastic. Yeah, you know, because if you know zucchini, you know you always have too much zucchini, and it goes, like you can't keep it forever. I don't think it probably cans really well as just zucchini. I think it would be really mushy. So if you can find some other stuff to do with it. Like one year we made zucchini jalapeno jelly. Oh my gosh, it was fantastic. It was really fantastic. You know, because you have that sweet hot thing going on. And I mean, it's just another thing to do with zucchini, you know. Because zucchini, if you know what I mean. If you don't know what I mean, I'll give you an idea. When you plant zucchini ever in your life, if you ever decide, hey, I'm going to have a garden, and you think, I'm going to plant some zucchini, just listen to this one bit of advice. Just plant one seed of zucchini. Okay, plant three seeds of zucchini, and as soon as one vine comes up, pull the other two. Because you're going to have more than enough zucchini. And I'm not kidding about that. You will have far more than you'll be able to eat. And you really can't give it away. I mean, you can, but it's tough because everybody has zucchini that they're trying to give away. So anyway, things are going good here on the homestead. Got a lot of food production going on. So we're doing some sun-dried tomatoes, which I don't know if y'all know this. I just learned this week, but sun-dried tomatoes are not sun-dried at all. I thought it was kind of crazy, but Crystal was telling me, yeah, if you just look at the recipes, I mean, maybe originally it started out being sun-dried tomatoes, but yeah, nobody sun-dries tomatoes anymore. It's all done like in the oven or in dehumidifiers, dryers, or whatever, but there is something about sun drying that actually doesn't work. And I forget what it is. I think if the sun is too intense, you know, it doesn't work. And if it's not sunny enough, I don't know. The whole system doesn't work. I'll look into it and give you a report on a future show as we wrap up from processing. But yeah, so we're sun drying tomatoes. We put a bunch of tomatoes in the freezer, and I know you're thinking, why would you put tomatoes in the freezer? Well, to freeze them, for one thing, because we're going to make sauce out of them. But we want to make sure we have all the tomatoes ready to go so that when we start saucing, we do it all in one day and get it all done. So we don't want to pick, like, you know, a couple gallons of tomatoes and sauce them and then have to break out everything and do another day and sauce some more a week later. So So we're freezing the tomatoes first, and then we'll make sauce out of them and probably ketchup and whatever. But hey, I'm looking forward to this weekend. And of course, I'm going to fill you in on Saturday. But so the rain is coming, which means, you know, those kind of wintry cold days that you have delicious hot meals, which in our case means some soups and chili and stuff. So we actually are going to have, we're going to make three fresh soups right from the homestead garden here. We're going to have a potato soup, a tomato soup, and an onion soup. And we're going to have some delicious, I don't know, maybe some artisan bread to go with it, a little sourdough or, you know, French or, I don't know, something, maybe all of them. So I'm really excited about that. And really just excited to be having the weather coming, you know, some cold, wet, stormy weather is what we need. And I'm looking forward to it. Although I'll be honest with you, I've been trying to get warm most of the day today because it was clear and sunny today, but it wasn't warm. I mean, yeah, it was chilly. You know, it was like, okay, I can tell the weather's changing. About that time anyway, we got all those bonus days, man. I was finally getting in the groove, like just relaxing and enjoying the sunny blue sky weather. 80 degrees is like, okay, just enjoy it, man. And I was really enjoying it. And now we're getting ready for the rest of the story, so they say. All right, remember, you can catch Hal Anthony Behind the Woodshed every Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And that, I'm telling you, one of the best shows on the entire internet. No joke. 2 hours of continuous information. The guy never takes a drink. I can't really say that. I don't watch him, but I listen to him, and it's like he goes solid, man. Two hours of information. And I'll tell you a little something else, too. This is going to sound terrible. Hal has a voice with like just the right tone in it. If you want to just kick back and close your eyes while you're listening, you could maybe get a little nap in, you know. Like if you can break yourself away from what he's talking about and just let his voice kind of, you know, soothe you to sleep, you can do it. I'm not kidding. I try and stay sitting upright when he's on because, yeah, his voice could put me to sleep for sure. But really interesting information always. And, of course, if you miss either the Redneck Dennis podcast or Hal Anthony Behind the Woodshed, you can pick us up on podcast. You know, we post our shows in many different places. So, and especially right here on Real Liberty Media, you can just come to our site. Go to our downloads page. Each one of us has our own blog post and download page, and you can download the podcast and listen to it whenever you want. That's the way I like to listen to most podcasts anyway, because I don't have time to just sit right here and listen. I mean, I could have that kind of time, but I'd never get anything else done. So, you know, I put the podcast on my phone and, you know, put the buds in, and I go get on the tractor, or go in the garden and the implement building, or, you know, drive to town and do whatever I have to do, and I have the podcast right with me. So, again, you know, Hal Anthony every Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern, and, of course, you can catch Redneck Dentist live every Wednesday and Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern. So be sure and come on to Real Liberty Media and check us out. Okay. I think that's the warm-up stuff. I wanted to finish something from last week. It seems like I cut off. Oh, yeah, the BPA. Okay. So I was talking about BPA, which is a, you know, an additive in plastic bottles and stuff that everybody's, you know, starting to talk about how bad it is for the environment and for people. And I was telling everybody, this is actually a byproduct of a certain dental filling material. And I wanted to kind of close with this statement, but I didn't quite get to it. We ran out of time. But the way back when they first started getting into tooth-colored dental fillings, and somebody, of course, had to come out with some study about how bad silver fillings are for you by drilling on some sheep's teeth that they just placed some silver fillings in and they weren't fully set, and it kind of gave an erroneous reading about how much mercury was put into the atmosphere and into your aerosol in the room when you were having those fillings taken out. And, you know, they were showing how bad the mercury and the fillings were for you, which is okay. You know, I think one of the things with medicine, dentistry, and, you know, kind of figuring out how do we replace and repair things in the human body, you know, you got to find some kind of material that's compatible. Of course, now we're getting to the point where we're just going to clone whatever it is or grow whatever it is and, you know, let your body do the rest of it. But, you know, as we have grown, you know, we've gained information on better materials. But if you think about it, those silver fillings, like, I can guarantee you 100% those silver fillings have lasted longer than any tooth colored filling ever placed. They just do. Like, you don't see a tooth-colored filling 10 years old that doesn't have leaky margins or isn't stained or whatever. But you'll see silver fillings in 60, 70, 80-year-old patients that said, yeah, I got those when I was in my teens. And the damn fillings are still in there and they're still doing fine. But you know what would happen is people would come to me and they would say, hey, I want these silver fillings removed. And I'd be like, oh, okay, well, I'm not really one of those kind of dentists. But, you know, there's those kind of dentists out there. So if you want them removed, you can certainly, you know, certainly get that done. There's a lot of dentists out there that will do it, because there was a lot of dentists out there that would charge you extra for removing those horrible silver fillings. And then putting these beautiful aesthetic fillings in that they would charge you more because they're aesthetic, right? And, but when people would come to me and tell me that they wanted them out, and I'd say, oh, okay, well, why do you want them out? And they go, oh, you know, they have mercury in them and it's making everybody crazy, which there's a whole nother topic of discussion in amalgams making people crazy, silver fillings making people crazy, because if that was the case, pretty much the entire population of the world who had, you know, access to first world dentistry, well, everybody would have been crazy because everybody got silver fillings. So, you know, it's a good argument against mercury causing you to go crazy, mercury that's in your tooth fillings causing you to go crazy. Although I'm not a fan. I mean, I'm not a fan of any poison. I've never promoted fluoride, like, because when I was in dental school, I mean, they told us how good it was, but they showed us that it really didn't bond to tooth structure, like, from toothpaste. You know, your highest, oh, don't get me started. I'll probably get, you know, kicked out of the American Dental Association or have my license yanked or whatever. But the bottom line is, you know, the benefit of fluoride maybe comes in, you know, giving it to your infant children as a drop. But good Lord, I mean, if you look at all the possible effects caused by fluoride in children, yeah, it's probably not a good idea to give it to them. And putting it in the water, I've never thought, like, how bad of an idea is this? That you actually put something that you're considering a medication into the water, like force everybody to take it. Although look what we just went through in the past 2 years. You know, the federal governments, all of them, all over the world lied to us. And now, I mean, we have, I'm not kidding, every single day some new news comes out, some new study comes out that pretty much proves everything that a lot of people said from the beginning, that we shouldn't be giving this medication to people because we don't know what it can do. We don't know what harms it can cause. And I have more stories today about even the manufacturers knew what they were, what their medication, their jab juice was capable of, and not capable of, and still the federal governments just ran with the information that you got to get this jab. So, you know, back to the fluoride thing, like putting it in the water, and then you as a consumer, somebody who lives in the city, basically, because that's where they do it, you know, you're forced to take it because it's in the water. Or you can buy some systems that will filter out fluoride and chlorine and, you know, everything else in your water. But, I mean, hell, way back when they started doing the whole fluoride in the water thing, there weren't those systems to be able to remove it. It was just like, yeah, you know, this is going to be the greatest thing. Nobody will have decay anymore. Well, if that was the case, I wouldn't still be, like, booked 6 months out at my practice because there's so much decay. If fluoride in the water would have worked, people wouldn't have decay. And I've worked in states where they have fluoride in the water, and I've worked in states where they don't have fluoride in the water, and guess what? Everybody has decay, a lot like COVID. I know people who got the jab, and I know people who didn't get the jab, and all of them got COVID. Not all of them. I didn't get COVID yet. I did get the jab. It's not because the jab protected me. I can guarantee you that. Because I've done everything I could do to eliminate that spike protein from my body and neutralize it as much as possible. And I have some more news today about how you can do that if you're interested. Although it keeps coming back to the same thing. So I'm hoping by continually repeating it, that people who are looking to detox from the jab or from having COVID, you know, there's things you can do that's going to help you out. And maybe I should put together a complete list sometime and just go over it, because it doesn't seem like anything new comes up on the list. It's the same stuff everybody keeps talking about that seems to neutralize the spike proteins and neutralize the effects of the vaccine, which I'm going to show you the documentation today that the manufacturers knew what the CDC knew the dangers of this jab. They collected data and didn't share it with the population. They didn't share it publicly how bad this jab was up front. But now you're starting to see it because people, real people who do real science and real research, are actually showing the results of the jab. They're actually tabulating results. They're gathering data. They're looking at hospital visits. They're looking at, you know, patient follow-ups after having the jabs or the booster. And they're actually putting the science out there. And the science is lining up exactly with what the manufacturers had in their documents before they went post-marketing experience. And everything's lining up, and worse, because now we're finding more and more things that the jab caused that, you know, the manufacturers, I don't think, had on their list. And that's what happens when you skip that safety protocol process that we just blew it away in the beginning of all this. Hey, we have to go at warp speed to make a vaccine, and we're going to skip all those safety measures because somebody said, yeah, I'm pretty sure this is safe. You know, like mRNA technology's been around for 10 or 15 years. It's just been in, you know, human trials. We haven't really been able to put it to use yet. But that's why you have those safety tests in place, those safety measures and that research in place, is so that you can look and see of all the possible problems that you get with this jab, any jab, any medication for that matter, goes through a rigorous testing process. And we didn't do that. We didn't do that. And now we're seeing, you know, personally, I believe that jab had everything to do with the heart attack that I had. And I can document it. easily medically through records, imaging of my heart, imaging of my carotids, imaging of my brain, imaging of my gut. Within the last 2 years, there was absolutely no predisposition to have a heart attack, none. Chem labs, everything in the last 2 years, plus the imaging that I had done 2 years before, a year before I got the jab, but somehow I ended up with a heart attack, and I'm not denying it anymore. I had a period there where I absolutely denied that I really had a heart attack, but I had a heart attack, man. I mean, it's all right there in black and white on my chart, on the EKG. It's clear that the imaging from cath lab, it's all clear. I had a heart attack. I shouldn't have, but I did. Well, let's move on, man. I am dragging my feet here. Okay, so I think I covered that wrap-up from last week, so let's cruise kind of fast through this. So this is a little kind of a story about transgender surgical assignment. This dad, Texas father, Jeff Younger, is prepared to file a federal lawsuit if his ex-wife moves to California in an attempt to chemically castrate their 10-year-old son under the state's new transgender sanctuary law. Remember, California is one of those states that said, hey, you know, you can just send your kids here, no parents even necessary. We're going to take them in and take care of them. And yeah, after we whack their genitals off or, you know, give them mastectomies and basically finish mutilating them, we'll send them back to you. But while they're here, they're going to be completely protected in California, please. Anyway, this Texas dad, so one problem is his wife is a pediatrician. That's got to be like the worst possible scenario. So his wife started dressing their son up as a girl when she was two and basically has forced this, in my opinion, forced this transgender idea on the child and now is preparing to move to California so they can complete mutilating this child. And what's funny is, not funny at all, what's really strange is, so what, that parent could take that son to California and get all the protection of the power of the state of California, and they can take his genitals off and, you know, put him on gender reassignment hormones and go through that whole process. But guess what? Dad takes the kid in to get a haircut, and mom hates it. So he says cutting his hair is considered abuse by the court, but cutting his penis off isn't. And this is where you are as a father today, he goes on to say. Now think about this. I mean, in this crazy world we live in, you can't take your son in for a haircut because it's abuse, but you can take him in to have his genital cut off, his genitals cut off. You can take him in to put him on these irreversible hormone treatments, but you can't take him in to get his dead hair cut off. Does that make any sense at all? Seriously? At least hair will grow back. What else did I have to say about this? Law to ban trans surgery on kids heads to court. Where did I get this? This is from the Epoch Times. Let me make sure this. I haven't looked at the camera much. Let me make sure it's here. Oh, yeah. Wild ride begins with court clash over first U.S. law to ban child transgender surgeries. And one of the things I noticed in this article, I know some of these things we're going to be fighting for a long time, going through the court system. You notice, this is also crazy. So, I got to say, somebody told Biden to say this because, Well, it's the perfect time to say it. I'll explain. Let me get a drink. Oh. So you notice Biden has come out like in the last couple days and said, like in this very powerful way, we got to get out and vote because we need to get more Democrats elected. If we get more Democrats elected, I am going to codify Roe versus Wade. And I was thinking to myself, now wait a minute. You had your chance. You had the House and the Senate. You could have done all that, and you didn't do it. I know it's just a way to kind of stimulate the base and get them out to vote, or maybe, you know, get some people. Like, here's a problem. Here's a big problem with this statement. Like, the percentage of the population who actually understands what codify Roe versus Wade means, the fraction of the population that actually would give two craps about that is so minute that I don't know who he's talking to. I mean, that's certainly no way to stimulate, you know, the 20-year-olds. They don't know what that means. They're telling you, they don't know what that means. Yeah, or maybe even 30-year-olds. Some of the 30-year-olds that I know would have absolutely no idea what that means. You know what? I don't blame them. I mean, who really would want to, you know, participate in politics these days, honestly? The other thing that's a big deal right now, I'm never going to get through my notes because I have too much to talk about. I just talk too much. You notice? That's my biggest problem. I'm going to crunch down one window so I can see. Another thing that I think is crazy is whenever, spokesperson for the president, I forget her name, Pierre something, I don't know. Whenever she talks about what Biden has done to reduce inflation, maybe everybody doesn't listen to this. I listen to things like with maybe a different perspective, but she always says, you know, and Biden himself will say this, well, we passed this inflation reduction law so we can cut down on the price of Medicare, you know, Medicare negotiated drug prices, prescription prices are going to be lower. And I'm thinking to myself a couple things. Okay, how many people are on Medicare, Medicaid, retirement medical programs? I mean, I know there's a lot. How many of them are still voting, honestly? Like, how many of them are actually filling out the ballots and voting? You know, I think some of them are like, hey, I'm retired. I don't care. Just keep my retirement check coming. And yeah, limit the cost of whatever. I don't care. It'd be great. If you could cut down on the price of my drugs, that'd be great. But do you think that that makes any sense to most of the voting population right now? So from age 18 to age 65, let's say, or 70, do you think that that comment, number one, it's not going to affect any of those people. That's not actually true because there's a lot of people who are either handicapped or receive benefits under retirement age because they're on Medicare or Medicaid or whatever. But it's not the majority of the population. It's a much smaller segment of the population that you say you're going to cut the cost of prescription drugs for. Because most everybody isn't on that program. So yay for you for cutting or attempting negotiating for lower prices for prescription drugs for a percentage of the population that is very small. So he makes it sound like he did this wonderful thing, but nobody gives a crap. People want to put gas in their cars and go to work, take their kids to childcare and to school, and to get groceries and come home and have a nice meal. Their prescription drug prices, they're not in the Medicare, Medicaid program. So that's not going to, I think that's why I heard, this is only gossip, of course, because based on polling that's done by who knows who, but I heard that there was a huge swing, like in the last month, that people were just like, yeah, we've had it with the Democrats. And I'm thinking to myself, well, yeah, if your message is that you're cutting prescription drug prices and you think that's going to put gas back in people's tanks, well, I'm sorry to tell you, but if you consider that the people who were on Medicaid before they reached retirement age are handicapped in one way or another, and the ones who've reached retirement age really aren't going anywhere doing anything, and you saved those people money, they're not even the ones really seriously contributing to the workforce and paying taxes and being affected by the inflation right now. But yeah, your two big arguments right before elections is that you saved, you cut the price of prescription drugs so Medicare can renegotiate the prices of prescription drugs, and you're going to codify Roe v. Wade, which you should have done this first 2 years if it was really a priority. If it was really a priority, yeah, you would have done it already because you controlled the House and the Senate. You had everything you needed to do it, and you didn't do it. So shut up. You're not going to do it. You're not going to gain those seats. We know it was just something you said or are saying to sound like you have something going on, and you don't. So that's enough of that. Yeah, what else? I was talking about this this transgender surgery, that they're going to ban these transgender surgeries. But what I actually noticed in this report, article, was I said you really have to watch language in some reports. The language has already been usurped by wokeness. Since then, it says Alabama, Arizona moved forward and passed their own laws, and California went 180 degrees and passed theirs. And I said, well, I'm glad these mutilating surgeries are coming under fire in the legal system. Some of the language developed over the decades of actually mutilating kids sugarcoats what is really going on. They say gender-affirming care and gender dysphoria. Now, maybe because, you know, at some point, what's that one book that, you know, the shrinks all have that, you know, they put their new diseases in this book? I forget what it's called. But, yeah, it's an actual book. And whenever they come up with another disease category, they put you in there. So, like, gender dysphoria is, I'm sure, in this book that the shrinks have that, you know, they've defined it as a disease, gender dysphoria. Gender-affirming care and gender dysphoria. Medical professionals often told parents, and I've said this before, that gender-affirming care is essential, and without it, their gender dysphoric children would likely kill themselves. That's how you get parents to move on, right? Because who wants to have that guilt laid on their shoulders as a parent? Oh, if I don't let Johnny get his penis whacked off, he's going to kill himself. And a lot of these people have come out and said, you know, yeah, even the hormone therapy isn't reversible because it slows down growth of, you know, the sexual organs, takes away some bone density, it, you know, interferes with your basic growth. And you can't turn around and turn that back on. But anyway, pretty much the greatest fear you could instill in a parent. So medical professionals who took the oath to first do no harm use fear tactics to scare parents into agreeing to allow this mutilation to move forward. Strange, the same fear tactic was used to scare the entire world into taking the experimental jab. So Broyles said, only a sliver of the medical community favors prescribing these treatments, but the ACLU-aligned medical groups are claiming most doctors agree with this practice. Do you see what's going on? a complete manipulation of facts. Okay, so a bunch of doctors join this group that the ACLU has aligned with, you know, their purpose to, you know, basically mutilate children. And then they say, you know, most doctors agree with this treatment, but that's not true at all. If you take the entire medical community and you ask all of the doctors in the medical community, do you agree with this treatment? Do you think it's safe and effective and reversible? No, they're not going to say it is. In fact, most of them, they say a sliver of practitioners actually think that this is a good practice or even a fair practice. Among the information that is being tamped down is puberty blockers are an off-label use for those drugs. None of these treatments have been approved by the FDA. Do you hear that? None of these treatments have been approved by the FDA because they couldn't satisfy the requirements, which is crazy. Let me just take you back a year or so, okay? So these hormone-blocking drugs, these gender-affirming treatments that require hormone replacement, those are off-label uses for those drugs, right? That apparently the American Medical Association thinks is a great idea. Thank you, AMA. Jerks. Two years ago, when you had doctors coming out that said they were saving people's lives, people who were exposed to COVID, people who got COVID, people who had horrible reactions to the jab juice that was supposed to protect them from getting COVID, they wanted to use the off-label, ivermectin, its off-label use, which is to interfere with virus replication. But oh no, we couldn't allow that to happen because, you know, that's just not safe medicine. And everybody got on board with that then. You know, the CDC was saying, no, you can't use ivermectin. Those of us who used it had to go jump through hoops to go kind of a roundabout legal way to get this drug shipped in from somewhere else, and it took a month or more because it took a week or so to get the prescription approved, and then it had to be shipped from wherever to get to here. Not that I did it. Of course, I didn't do that. Anybody who's looking for that. But yeah. That was an off-label use, and you couldn't do it. It was too dangerous. But here, you can use these other drugs. They're off-label use to basically totally screw up a kid's life. And I just think it's ridiculous that we've allowed this to get this far. Same with abortions, man. And I'm going to tell you, this is the first time I'm going to say this publicly. I was involved with an abortion, personally. My baby was aborted. There was a good reason for it. I don't believe most of us are against abortions for medically necessary reasons, okay? But, man, that slippery slope that we got on and that we went down for 40, 50, 60 years, to the point where, yeah, you're killing fully developed 9-month-old babies just before they come out of the birth canal, just because, man. Just because. There's not a good reason. There's not a good reason. The mom and the baby can survive at that point. They can both survive, and they can both go on to live great, viable lives. And yeah, there's a lot of people in this world who would love to take that baby if mom doesn't want it. Same thing has happened with this transgender mutilization road we went down. You know, to terrify parents into into agreeing to let this mutilization be done to their children. Because if they don't do it, the child's going to go out and kill themselves. And in most cases, that's not even true. Like, most psychologists will show you that, you know, they have proof, a history of patients who waited until they were, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old. They went to therapy. They got help. You know, they got the help and loving kindness that they needed from the medical community and from their family to get them through that time when they thought that they weren't satisfied with their own bodies and they thought they wanted to be the other gender. But really, when they got on with their life a little bit, they realized, yeah, no, that's not exactly what, you know, I'm glad I didn't do that then because, yeah, you can't go back. And I think so much of this treatment has been sold to parents and children. I'm not even going to talk about children. They can't, honest to God, they can't make that decision on their own. They don't have the reasoning capacity at age 10, 11, 12 to make that decision. They just don't. Hell, they can't put their shoes on the right feet at the same, they can't put their shoes on the right feet regularly. Some of them. So no, they're not going to make that decision, but the parents do. And the parents get, you know, kind of forced into that thought that, you know, oh, this is reversible. So, you know, down the road, if you don't like being the other gender, you know, we can change it and get it back. You know, the other thing is, I can't believe, you know, that's an awful lot of money to spend. No kidding. I mean, you know, if it was life-saving surgery, I know a lot of families would come up with it. But, I mean, most of the country can't come up with the kind of money, can't come up with the kind of money you need to have that surgery done. Man, that's a long process going through the hormone therapy and the psych evals and the medical evals and then actual surgery and recovery. And it's not usually, I don't think, often done in one surgery. It's, multiple surgeries. And that can get expensive. Of course, some states just pay for it. Their state insurance plan pays for it or whatever. But, yeah, it's a lot of money. it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money to spend to have your child mutilated irreparably if they don't like it. That's a scary, scary part for me. What do we got left? 7 minutes. Plenty of time. Let's talk about the trail of blood left by the jab. This is kind of interesting. This is the trail of blood. Make sure it's on the screen. Trail of blood from the COVID jabs. I'm glad that they actually start talking about that. These two doctors claim they've discovered a way to test for spike protein in human tissue, and they found spike protein in individuals who were injured or died from the shots. And the story at a glance really covers it pretty well. I don't think I had anything else in it. Oh, where is this in my... Oh, yeah. Yeah, this story at a glance is really well done, I think. Abnormal blood clotting was one of the first mysterious health effects to emerge in the COVID pandemic. First as an effect of the natural infection and later as a side effect of the jabs, which kind of makes sense if you're putting parts of that virus that I don't know has ever been isolated yet into somebody's body and having it recurate that one part that may cause the bleeding. Well, guess what? It'll happen in the infection and it'll happen in the jab because you put it in with the jab juice. And I think that's what happened to me, by the way. All right, a team of international scientists detailed the mechanism behind the AstraZeneca's jab propensity to trigger blood clots. The shell of the vector, a weakened chimpanzee cold virus, in some people acts like a magnet and attracts platelets. Your body mistakes these platelets as a threat and produces antibodies to fight them, resulting in dangerous blood clots. Israeli researchers have also linked the Pfizer jab with a rare blood clotting disorder. A Swedish study found two doses of the COVID jab were 43% protective against Omicron infection by week four. By week 14, the protection had dropped to zero. So here we go. All of these things, you know, that we've said about this jab over the past 2.5 years, they're all coming true. And you'll remember, if you go back and listen to the Redneck Dennis podcast, there's shows that I went over this and I said, you wait until these universities and institutions start doing their studies, you know, and manipulating and collecting data and actually applying statistics to the data, and you're going to see the truths come out. And today, we're shining light on the darkness of the COVID jab, for sure. So the effectiveness dropped to COVID-related hospitalizations remained around 80% until week 25, but dropped to 40% by week 40. Using one statistical analysis method, COVID jab Swedes had a higher risk of death or hospitalization from COVID roughly a year after receiving their second dose. So you don't think they're trying to kill us with this jab? And why in the hell do we... So why does the CDC now say they're trying to get this movement going, or I don't know, they're probably just going to try and make it a law that in order for kids to attend public school, they're going to have to get the jab. I'm not kidding. I'm over it. I think public school, you definitely just have to say no to public school. Find something else. Homeschool, turn them loose on their own. Just, I don't know. There's got to be a solution that kids can get the basic knowledge they need to go on with life and not be subjected to this. Because if you look at every single group of people that has been targeted to get this COVID jab, every single group has been more severely injured by getting the jab. You look at the military people, the elderly, who they just killed off so many of them by either putting them in, you know, COVID replication residences, or giving them the jab, or hospitalizing them and giving them the wrong treatment, horrible treatments that didn't prevent them from dying. In fact, probably, well, in some cases, they were just starving them to death because they weren't feeding them when they were in there. And they were just getting, you know, not the right, they were just weren't getting the proper care at all. But let's get through some more of this. What else did I have to say here? A recent case report links the COVID shots to lethal myocarditis. I don't know where that is. Heart inflammation and encephalitis, brain inflammation. Abnormal blood clotting was one of the first. Yeah, I said that. Article in Science Norway read in part 7, our theory that this is a powerful immune response most likely triggered by the vaccine has been confirmed, says professor and chief physician Pal Andre Holme, in collaboration with experts in the field from the University Hospital of Norway, Halifax. We have found specific antibodies against blood platelets that can cause these reactions. Specific antibodies against blood platelets. So it wasn't that the platelets were attached to some part of the virus that the jab juice supposedly made. It's that they literally have antibodies to platelets after getting the jab. That's ridiculous. There's nothing in the patient history of these individuals that can give a powerful immune response. I am confident that the antibodies that we have found are the cause, and I see no other explanation. As reported in the Daily Mail Online, they found the shell of a new vector vaccine, the weakened cold virus used to teach cells how to neutralize COVID, sometimes acts like a magnet and attracts platelets. Yeah, they already discovered that that's not true. The recent science are still probing the body, then mistakes these platelets as a threat and produces antibodies to fight them. We know that's not a thing. But now listen to this. This is the craziest thing of all. So now COVID-19 vaccine injury syndrome is not a disease. It's actually a syndrome. Okay, the complex myriad of symptoms in people suspecting of COVID-19 vaccine injury has been given a new name and extensive treatment protocol. post-COVID-19 vaccine syndrome, founder and chief science officer of the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care. Ah, that's it.
Dang,
thank
almost.
You for listening to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Please show your support for the podcast. This podcast is not on the biggest platforms, but it is on the best free speech platforms. Until next time, remember, all bleeding eventually stops.